Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time to give back, and most importantly, especially with our culture, okay,
We have to. We have to. All right. Inform our people about health and nutrition, because that's the bedrock. All right. And also, I just want to say before I bring on my guests that I had the pleasure of meeting a master healer back in the day. He came to Newark to the health food store, my man George, Dr. Layla Africa. He wrote the book, African Holistic Health. I still got this in paperback. I got over here, and I was and I had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Layla. My man Clayvon brought him in, all right? And these are his students, and unfortunately, the dear brother made the transition, but when he was here, he left a very, very impactful footstep for us all to follow in. And these brothers and sister and the two brothers that are with her are about to give us a wealth of information. So without further ado, I'd just like to bring on my people from the African Holistic Community. My dear sister, are you there?
I'm here, big bro. How are you?
All right. I'm doing fine. So I know you work with the brothers. My technician said the other two brothers in. So could I have the opportunity, my debt of gratitude to, could you introduce the two brothers who are with you?
Well, we have Baba Dawood. He's a brilliant, brilliant person. He's heads up our mental health area of the chapter. I would love him to speak first, if that's okay. And then I got Brother John, who's also, he's our massage therapist expert in the chapter. And he's also really good in terms about nutrition. So I would love them to speak first before I speak, if that's okay.
Listen, sister, the platform is yours. Whichever way you want to run the curriculum over there is cool with me. You know, they always say, okay. I guess they always say, without the brothers, I know they ain't envious. You know, you always save the best for last. So go right ahead, sister. Listen, I'm going to be quiet, and I'm going to take in the message that you guys are going to give my podcast audience. All right? So the floor is yours. And Brother Dawood and Brother John, peace and blessings to you brothers in the background back there. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Oh, peace and blessings. Thank you for having
me. Peace and blessings to you too, sir.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
Well, Sister Shai asked it first, and I will proceed. I'm Brother Dawood. I hail from the state of Ohio. That's where I spend most of my time as a therapist. I've now transplanted and to the New York area, and I'm glad to be welcomed by the African Holistic Society as a member, and I really appreciate them because they are helping me on the road to more healing. She asked me to choose a topic, and the topic I choose is a topic that is not getting near enough attention that it deserves, and that is although it's recently hit some news headlines in recent years, but just not enough focus, is the problem we have of black child suicides from ages 5 to 19 years of age. This is so very important, and I can begin anywhere. I can begin in the 80s, but I'll begin after the crash of 2008, a lot of officials, particularly the person running for office for the presidency, Bloomberg blamed us for, in terms of wanting too much home and not enough credit to substantiate the bar we were given. The truth is that we were targeted. Disproportionately so, and we disproportionately suffered as a result of not an economic crash or a great recession. It was as a result of white elite creditor exploitation of our people, where we by 2010, over 50% of our collective wealth. This thrust black children as a group into level of poverty black children have not experienced since the Second World War. And to this day, we have not been repaired, nor have we as a group focused on the repairing of our children disproportionately facing levels of poverty their great-grandparents only experienced. As a result, by 2012, I suspect, but officially documented by 2014, our children, for the first time in documented mental health history, took the lead on suicides from, again, ages 5 to 19 years of age. They have maintained that. At least I've not heard any figures that shows there's been any reverse. And I don't expect any reverse because there's been no direct repair of black families in particular who lost so much and the conditions of our black children. The only time that there's been any focus on by the media, which I prefer to refer to as the white domination racist media, the only time that child suicides on the whole have been referred to is because there had been a spike of child suicides as a result of the improper government and state governments took on responding to COVID, which, again, should have been better responded to given that it beforehand was well known that black people as a whole would disproportionately suffer, as we have. Therefore, going into COVID, black children were already suffering. As young as age five, and with COVID coming, the jobs lost that further put families under stress, and the disproportionate deaths and illness that disproportionately put them under stress, is it any wonder that there was also a continued not only spike among white children, but also the continued growth of potential suicides among black children? Should not be a surprise. But because a spike among white children occurred, then news media started covering as a public health concern the need to take better care of and pay more attention to children suffering due to suicide. So we are really at a great juncture. We have been officially since 2014, and I'd say even before that, since the collapse we were blamed for by 2010. That's when it was noted that we had lost over 50% of our collective wealth, and we were set back to 1965 levels in terms of home ownership, which is security. And one of the things that lead stories at the time, forgive me, I digress just a little bit, is how black women as a group suffered disproportionate rental problems or evictions as a result, when the problem was much more deeper than that, especially as it impacts our children. So in responding to all that, I am glad to be working with the as a mental health consultant for the African Holistic Society in basically helping those who fall through the cracks or not even paid attention to get the type of support they need. Just recently, I were given a call by a person who did not trust the system because a child had shown suicidal ideation, made some suicidal comments. And for the first time, this woman who specializes in working with children, for me, that black children have been suffering this as a whole. There's no excuse for that other than being in a white domination, racist, society-run media system that omits, diminishes, or totally obliterates our realities in this society. And I'm glad to be a part of the African Holistic Society that's willing to address this. I'm done. Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you, my brother.
Yes, I'm done.
Well, thank you for that information, my brother. That was well taken, and we're going to do a Q. By the way, Sister Sharp, how do you want to do this now? Because I do have my panel up here, and they may want to ask the brother some questions pertaining or comments.
Oh, go ahead. However you want to do it, You can ask questions now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was that Brother John or Daoud?
Brother Daoud.
That was Brother Daoud. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is, because it's always ladies first, but in your case, you're coming last, Sister
Yes.
Shai. So I'll do a roll call because I don't know who's on here. Sister Carol, do you have any questions that you would like to ask Brother Daoud or make a comment?
Hello, and thank you for that information. Brother Daoud, you said that suicide and children from five and up, we're seeing suicides in children that young?
From ages 5 to 19, and this was well known by 2014. The American Psychological Association documented it, their findings, in 2014, ma'am.
Wow. It's just like, a five-year-old? How do five-year-olds kill themselves? And I'm not being funny when I ask this, but what do they do to kill themselves?
We've heard some of the reports mainly connected to bullying, but mm-hmm. bullying is just a symptom. So people kind of, accept such tragedies more because it seems like the protagonist is the, you know, the bad bully. The problem is the bully is responding to stressors in their homes they can't solve, and so they take it out on others. As a result, yeah. if there's also pressures going on with the victimized bully's family, this tends to push them over edge. They're doing everything from what they've seen adults do, everything from what is claimed as either playing with gun incidents, chances are very high. No, that's not the case. To hangings, which is kind of obvious, and also pill taking.
Mm,
they get to adult pill stash and those other things. But a lot of them, you know, display suicidal ideations, meaning they may be displaying excessive depression, excessive and probably not eating very well, or behavior act outs because they don't know how to adapt to the stressors that are going on in their life. And sadly, people are going to those symptomatic behaviors and not really touching those root causes, which then leads to the taking of their own lives. And we had a semblance of this in the 80s, I submit to you, dear lady. It's just that the environmental conditions were not as dire as they are since the white elite robbery of 2008, 2009. What we saw, if you're over 40 especially, you remember there was this little phenomenon of young children in crack-addicted areas, crack-identified areas, planning their funerals because they'd experienced so much death around them. Well, that was just the beginning salvo into the reality that young people could conceive of a life without them living in it. So they were doing things like planning their funerals. I remember that at the time, I was a case manager at the time, that got a lot of people shocked. Well, you know, the report of the APA shocked a lot of people too. It's just that the characteristic reminders that media often does of concerns of people is not categorically done for us. In this area, we just get these new spots of the lives being taken without a critical analysis as to how this is expected impacting the whole. That's why people would be surprised. Young people are even getting access to pornography, for example, that they weren't 20 years ago because of these devices. And so some people, while they cannot be designated as being addicted, show definite addictive behaviors similar to adults and connected to porn that a lot of these parents don't realize their children as young as five are getting access to. And I could speak to that more directly in that case, but focusing on suicide, yes, the young children are utilizing vehicles that they see and they know adults are able to get access to take their own life.
Okay, thank you. That's something else.
Was there anything else, Sister Carol, you wanted to ask or make a comment on?
No, I don't want to.
Address anything else? No. Okay. All right, that's Sister Carol. All right. Karen, are you there? Okay. Karen must not be in. All right, she may not want to ask a question. Okay. Sister Adrian, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, my dear. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I love the fact that you're talking about this topic. I've been a children's mental health worker for almost 20 years at a time, and that's something that nobody likes to talk to, childhood suicide. And children, they see everything. They see what adults are doing, and I've seen it not just suicide, but I've had clients as young as 4 years old, living in a very hostile household, and she would just sit in class, and she was in daycare, and pull her hair out. And you would see she had patches and patches of hair all gone. And the teacher got concerned and told her mother, she just sits in here and pulls her hair out. You know, and nobody understood it. What is a four-year-old so stressed out about? And our children are stressed, you know, and our parents don't know. They don't understand. What is her problem? You know, her problem is you and daddy fighting all day. Her problem is the police busting in your house to arrest the parents. And every time you turn around, DCF is at the house talking about taking the kids away. these kids are not stupid. They hear this, and it stresses them out. Now, the question is, what do you do about it? What do we as society can do about it? I worked in mental health, so they would be my clients, and so I know resources like getting them into some kind of therapy or play therapy for children that young. But it goes all the way up. I've had 13-year-olds that they felt that the world would be a better place if they would just leave, you know. And they just – and at 13, you really can't rationalize things like they want. You know, unfortunately, I had a client who lived in the projects, went up to the top of the projects, the 15th-floor roof, and jumped off the roof. And what I see as the problem is not the children, is that the adults around them are not picking up on all these signs they give them. They can tell them they're depressed, or they can just be crying for no reason, or they just overreact to something minor. Now, this 13-year-old did that. She was upset. You know, her mother remarried. She doesn't like the stepfather. They don't get along. And she told him to make her take the garbage out, and she went up to the roof, the 15-story roof, with the garbage and jumped off the roof with the garbage. And I guarantee you, to this day, mom is still saying, what happened? You know, we need to listen to our children, and when they're showing these behaviors, we need to say something and do something. Not yelling at them is not always the way to deal with it, because our kids are really stressed. You got to see it. That's why I'm done.
Okay. You want to give the sister a comment there, Brother Daoud?
She also answered the previous person's questions. Their children are utilizing the means at their disposal to harm themselves. And, again, there could be degrees of harm, to the extreme of taking one's life, to the self-mutilation of the hair pulling. There's also cutting, which has usually been characteristic of white children. But again, these are modes that any children under stress will display. The problem is our society is disproportionately stressed because we have to endure long-term periods of both economic and social levels of deprivation. And
yes,
stressors, hearing about police officers killing unarmed black people, you know, innocent unarmed black people, they've not been tried or convicted by any jury. That is another form of stressor that is popularized on social media that they're running into. These are other messages they're running
into, right,
aside from the stressors that may be going on in their lives. So that means that there's an outer external pressure that adults, again, immediate adults, aren't helping them to solve, nor are adults that are in positions of so-called power helping to solve. I will go into this other area because it's another thing that we dropped the ball on, and I don't mean that to be totally negative, but we have not picked up the mantles of political and organizational activism that we once had so that we can be in the position of hopefully getting more resources to bear so that we're not so reliant on hopeful that institutions will do right by us. But because there's not consistent pressure to ensure better and positive outcomes. And I mean this with all due respect, but, you know, I worked in the system for 30 years, and I was very angry through when the APA determined that this was happening to black children disproportionately for the first time ever. And my wondering was, well, if I know this, well, what are the people that are in power in Congress on the national level or the state level? To some degree, there's been some positive movement on the state level to where health institutions have relegated that racism itself is a public health concern. I still haven't seen any policies really come from that at the grassroots or local level yet. My guess is happening in spots and spurts. At the same time, on the national level, why is it that I, as a practitioner in 2014, read the APA report, and there's not a corresponding report from Congress on this? or our black legislators of the CBC commenting on this. Total silence.
Right.
Now, I can give you some perspective in that politically, sadly, black leadership dropped the ball.
Yeah.
To provide the resources for families to survive and thrive in. Instead, what we got was Obama's My Brother's Keepers program that was unfunded. Sorry about that. Unfunded program to address, I submit, they were very much aware of the AP results by 2014. The CBC, by effect, provided Obama cover by allowing him to provide or to announce the Brothers Keepers program while totally admitting that our black children were suffering in need of resources and support. But the CBC establishes a report, guess when? Not in 2014, not in 2015, not in 2016 at the end of Obama's run. They do so in the summer of 2019, people,
wow.
where Trump was in office. Such a disclosure, I submit, was used to embarrass Trump for not doing enough for the community while letting three or four freaking years go by on Obama. Now we're in a past a year in a Biden administration. They do the report, which they finished in December 19. I'll be glad to send it to you, thoroughly talking about this problem that I'm sharing with you now, but being silent in the total first year of Biden's administration. Now, come on. Help me out with this. But we are not aware of this enough to put pressure to bear. Instead, we go for black girl magic and symbolism on a court approval with a person who has a questionable record for us while our babies are suffering. I'm done.
Well, Brother Daoud, I just want to say this, piggyback, because you gave me a little snapback, throwback in my mind, because when I was 15, and I tell everybody this, I got my black conscience when I was, and I shared this with Sister Shaw when I first started talking, then I reached out to him, we started talking. Mary Baraka. All right, now if anybody knows anything about black history, they know who, we call them Imamo here in North. Imamo, which means teaching in Swahili, Mary Baraka. And I always said throughout the years, my father put me, because my father and Mary were tight, but my father put me in his organization when I was 15, okay? And I also met Milana Ron Karenga, because him and Amiri were tight. Milana was on the West Coast now in L.A. with the US organization, and we had Committee for Unified Newark over here in Newark. And Amiri was responsible for putting the first black mayor in the city of Newark here, Ken Gibson. And I've always thought throughout the years, brother, I said, you know what? We had more unity to a degree because, you know, there's some of us that are still zombified walking around out here acting like we don't know how to do better, you know. And I said the brothers with the dashikis who I really looked up to. I mean, when I was 15, man, you don't know how I felt when I was called up to – I thought I was going to get a promotion, but that wasn't the case because in the organization we had ranks, all right, and coming in you were a Kobe. Then you got promoted to a Simba, Mwanafunzi, Chael, Jaleti, Kasisi, Amasani, but nobody could touch Imamo because Imamo was the man, all right? That was Amiri. And I used to have – they said, Kobe, run upstairs. Imamo wants to see you. I go up there and pound my chest walking in. Yes, sir. Kobe, here's $3. My tuna fish sandwich is ready across the street. But I felt good doing that at 15 because, yes, I'm running across the street for Mary Baraka. And I, throughout the years, brother, just hit, you know, my brain just slipped again. What happened to the organizations that we had out here?
Yep,
you know,
right.
We were proud and we were respected. And I'm gonna tell you something: the sisters felt safe walking the streets because the brothers, if they saw something going on, three or four brothers, and our witnesses, they get out of the car and say, "Hey, get your hands off that woman, brother. What's wrong with you?" And the brothers trained the martial arts, okay, and We just had it kind of a little bit more tight in our communities. And now with these young brothers out here, man, I'm trying to tell you, listen, I try to talk the talk and walk the walk. When I sit down, I try to talk to them, you know. They're just so drugged out. And this is not all young people because you can't stir everybody in the same pot. But it just breaks my heart knowing that when my father put me in Baraka's organization, And now looking at how these young brothers are, they really, they're lost sheep out here. And it just hurts me to my heart to see how they acting out here. And, you know, you got to be careful because they're so angry that if you intercede in a respectful way, they might try to turn on you, okay? And like I said, one thing about me, brother, I'm 65, but I stay in shape. So if a young boy try to jump on me, I got a little something for him. Now, I used to box for a year, and I ain't trying to, you know, pat myself on the back, okay? But I always make sure, and I tell people closer to my age and a little younger, stay in shape, exercise, do what you need to do to keep yourself in shape because you never know when that trumpet might sound, okay? But that's just unfortunate that we just don't have the organization. Where did it go? It shouldn't have went nowhere. Yeah. When Amiri passed, somebody should have been in tow to take his place. Keep that dashiki on, the black brogans we wore, the uniformity, the boot dancers, the Shaka Zulu dance. I remember all that. The Spirit House. You know, when Amiri Baraka, he's a well-known playwright. He had the Spirit House two blocks away. And I used to go there and watch the plays, okay? But like I said, brother, things are just so watered down. And oh, man, you talking about Obama, I tell him, I tell people, he was one of the biggest distractions there were. Because look at where he's at now. I said, well, now he's in Martha's Vineyard, 16.1, for what I understand, $16.1 million mansion him and his wife live in, all right? I tell you what, you think they put a knee on George Floyd's neck, try to walk past that saddle that goes into Martha's Vineyard. man, listen. You won't live. You'll disappear. When the last time you seen Malik? Well, he was talking about walking over here to Martha's Vineyard. He wanted to give Obama a piece of his mind for what he shouldn't have done with that wicked woman, Hillary Clinton. You know how they took out Gaddafi. They shouldn't have had no, but their smear campaign made a lot of people gullible. Yeah, they had to go in there and do what they did. No, they didn't. You know the deal with the Denier, all right, and organization organizing, like you said, organization, organizing those African countries. You had nine countries that were in tow with them. We don't need the American dollar. They're going to deal with us in gold, brother. Oh, that put a target on his back. And then you know what they did. And I tell people, just to show you the savagery of this government and other people about, you know, they took that bayonet, that knife, and you know what they did with it, all right?
Yes, I do.
So they tortured that man and assassinated his family, man. And it happened under Obama. And Will Obama's good for getting on TV and saying, well, I'm the commander in chief. It stops here. But that means you knew, all right? How the hell do you get a Nobel Peace Prize, all right, dropping bombs? Every administration, Dr. King got, he was against war. Dr. King would have said, no, man, he wouldn't have lit a match to do no type of harm to any country. That's what he said, and that's what he gets the Nobel Prize. How the hell do you give a man, no, good, once again, a distraction, my man Stan White says, a weapon of mass distraction. That's what he was, okay? But, brother, go ahead. Listen, I got people on the panel, brother. Don't get me started. I get fired up, man. I'm just so angry with the shot. They're trying to put this, they're trying to put this shot in kids and little babies. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. You're putting the poison. The immune system hasn't even, oh, man. All right, listen, I might be missing. Do we have any other ladies? Is Sister Atiyah on? Okay, she's not on. Maybe she's hit the number one button. Do we have any other ladies before I go to the brothers that are unmuted? All right, going once. Going twice? Okay. All right, now to my African holistic group out there, I just want to say, because like Malcolm said, we're all Africans, I want to take you to now, my dear Brother Bashad. Brother Bashad, are you out there? This is the brother. He's a naturopath, and he's our in-house healer, Brother Bashad. Brother Bashad, yeah, brother?
Yes, my brother. Peace to everybody.
Okay.
Hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. Go right ahead, my
brother.
I want to thank Brother Daoud for that information he shared. I was very aware of that. Notes on children commit suicide. That's a sad commentary just to hear something like that, you know. Brother Forrest, when you were talking about Imamu Baraka and all that, you know, they got us away from all this black consciousness, you know. Back in the day, I tell you, you didn't hear stuff like this. This society we live in is a very wicked society. These poor children are born into all this wickedness that surrounds them and stuff. And a lot of this social media has a lot to do with this. And dysfunctional families, like your brother was saying, and families not checking what their children are looking at on social media and all. And, you know, just these things here are affecting our children really bad. And I remember back in the day, I was in the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad at that time. And like you were saying for us, you know, you didn't play around with people, especially the women and all these things. We had things under control. In Newark, we had things under control. We kept the crime down, all that stuff. We didn't allow that. And don't try to hurt the children. It's going to happen. But now they got us away from black consciousness when they came in with all these drugs, with the disco era and all that. That's when all this stuff really started happening, the murdering and killing and all this here. So we're living in this terrible society, and we have to find ways to be able to counsel these children. We need some kind of organizations and buildings we have to get. We can counsel families, teach them how to be mothers and fathers and how to raise their children up properly, because a lot of them are not raising up their children properly. They're raising themselves up. They're caught up in the streets and all this here. And, you know, the one book I always suggest people read, and I know all you heard of that book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. That book tells you a lot about the effects of slavery, okay, that's still haunting our people. And it has an effect on the minds of the children and adults. And that's why we see so much going on. And then you have these wicked people out there who are child molesters and all this here. You know, it's just crazy. It's just a crazy world we live in. And we need to have to change things. And I don't trust no politicians. They just tell so many lies. They make promises to our community all the time, but they don't follow up. Mm-hmm. It's like you're talking about President Baraka for us, and don't expect this new president to do anything for us. I don't expect, you know, I don't even listen to these guys no more. They say one thing, they still talk with a forked tongue, so don't expect any promises to be fulfilled by them. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, brother. That's Brother Rashad El-Amin. That brother been with me from day one, you know, and I want to thank you for that commentary, brother, because he'll probably come back on when Brother John comes back on. But, you know, remember now, I just want to say something to my family. If I'm wrong, fact check me. And family, y'all can hit the number one, but you can fact check me. When Obama ran, he ran because he was selected. Don't think he just popped up out of nowhere. He was selected, all right, by the people who run the world, all right? And
could I chime in on that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You're also by trade. I kind of did a lot of things coming up. And did background on him. You're right. He not only was he selected, while they promote if you just work hard enough, you too can become president. I know some of the people that are fact-checked and called conspiracy-minded, a CIA term to limit thought, that he has a lineage of white slave owners. Same with Kamala Harris. They have a particular lineage that the powerful prefer to go to as examples of what it takes to make it in their echelons. And so he had a presidency that I warned my family and I warned friends and relatives about in the summer of 2007, because my research concluded that he would not be of interest to us. And I was ridiculed because I am in the place of history being made and a black man being on that in that office. When I said no, his lineage is white slavery, and he will be beholden to that. He was chosen, which we're now playing out in Ukraine right now. He hates he hated Russia, and he found Obama. That's the story anyway. I think he knew of the family earlier. He found Obama at age 20 on college, and he became his person that changed the course of Obama's election run leading up to the election of 2008 was him being on television advocating for Obama instead of Hillary Clinton. That's when money started coming into Obama. Now, I watched that. Mm-hmm. And I told people that that was going to happen. If that happened, that means he was not going to run a presidency in our interests. That was a big indicator to me. His first 2 years when they had the Democratic control of Congress, he could have used that to do a lot of legislation, not just for black people, just to make – he didn't. He allowed Wall Street to choose man. Dream for a presidency, and everybody watched it happen. And they only talk about him when the Republicans retook Congress, as though Republicans stopped him from doing anything. And I always bring people back. What about those first 2 years? If he was really a fair-minded man and identified as black, he squandered it purposely because that was what he was supposed to do. Just like Biden and Harris are squandering their first 2 years. Doing all kinds of things other than doing things for the people so that they will lose, as they will lose in this coming election. I foretold it. And Republicans will now dominate instead of blaming an internal blue dog Democrat. I can't remember his name right now. I can't believe it because as much they fed us his name. They're going to start blaming Republicans for not being able to get things done. People, it's a game they're playing.
It's a game they're playing. Exactly. Brother Dallas, hold on for a minute. Jay, we're getting a lot of feedback. Where's that coming from? Because someone may have to mute their phone on there, and you can stay unmuted. But you hear that feedback, Jay? Because sometimes, Brother Dow, when you're talking, you fade out and you come back in.
That may be my headset. I'll stop moving around.
Oh, okay. All right, go right ahead, my brother. Yeah, but you know what? I tell people he had that slogan out there, and now how's he making his money? I heard he gets, like, close to, what, half a million, $1 million? I ain't mad at somebody if you're making your money and you're helping people.
He did their bidding, and therefore they're paying him off. And everybody saw that as, well, he's just getting his because he was a good president. And we've got to stop letting things slide like that. Sadly, we've allowed things to slide.
Yes. But remember, he kept saying Main Street, not Wall Street, but that's where he's making his money now. He's making speeches in front of all the fat cats right now. And they're paying
that he didn't
them.
Put
they're
in prison
them.
Because of what they did to the housing market.
Right. So
hey, Paul,
once again, you. Yes, sir.
There's a book I had picked up quite a while back. It's for the case against Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
The unlikely rise and unexamined agenda of the media's favorite candidate.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a lot about his background, brother. Mm-hmm.
I would like to say also that he had a very similar presidency to Clinton. There's a good book on him called Super Predator, The Truth About Clinton and How He Really Treated Black People. Because of that, I dubbed Obama summer of 2007, just before the election. I called Obama, his presidency will be as Bill Clinton in blackface, and it was.
Yes, sir. Well, like I said, my brother, Daryl, remember now also with Obama, when some of his harshest critics, two I can name, was Cornel West and Tavis Smiley.
Yes.
And then next thing you know, you see how they got Tavis off of, I think Charlie Rose was a sacrificial lamb. Once again, a distraction. We get rid of the white guy, and Tavis Smiley follows right behind him. Okay?
Yes.
And then I really believe, and Tavis even said, hey, I didn't do anything inappropriate. I hope the brother's doing something because I haven't heard from Tavis in a while. But I enjoyed the way he interviewed everybody. The brother has a brilliant mind because he could go from an artist to a painter to a doctor. He talked to everybody. But see, like I said, I think he knows that he was targeted.
Yeah, I prefer to focus on what our people did as a whole. And sadly, we embraced the symbolism of Obama and what he meant in that position. When Tavis Smiley, and Cornel West talk specifically about the impact of Reaganomics that's continuing and Clintonomics that's continuing and its devastation on poor folk, particularly our children. They mentioned our children, and this is before the suicides began to rise.
Right.
Black people ridiculed them. That's the problem. We know the media is going to do what it does and what eventually happened to Taz and Smiley. But the sad thing is black people cared more about the symbolism of Obama than they cared about black children, and they're continuing that same behavior today. They should have rallied behind Tavis Smiley and Cornel West and their poverty campaign they were trying to bring attention to, because in those first 2 years, Obama squandered and made the conditions of black people worse. And what did black people do on the whole? They slaughtered them. They even had death threats from us trying to advocate for our babies. It's a shame. I'm sorry, I'll stop.
No, okay, my brother. Okay, so Brother Leon, are you there, my brother? Now, this brother works for kids down in Atlantic City, by the way, Brother Dowd. This is right up your alley, brother. And him and Coach Anderson are from Atlantic City, from the Atlantic City area. Brother Leon, are you there, my brother? You got to give him a minute. I know he's there. He got to mute himself.
No, Leon isn't on tonight.
He's not on yet? Oh wow! No. Okay, I'm shocked. Okay, all right. Well, is there anybody else that's unmuted? So I'm gonna let Brother Dawood finish with his closing comments, if he has any closing comments. Anybody else have a comment or question for the brother?
Brother Forrest, this is Rashad.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say this about President Barack Obama. He had no African American roots. White mother, African father, and they were going to make sure you weren't going to have a real African-American president. They really don't want to see that. And Kamala Harris also, no African-American roots.
Mm-hmm.
Indian mother, half Jamaican and half white father, born in Canada, okay? No African-American roots. These people of color that have no African-American roots, they don't want to see somebody in power who has real African-American roots. They're scared of that. So they'll pick these people like that to be in power, but they're not going to do nothing for us.
Right.
Like I always said, he followed in the footsteps of Clinton, okay, which Clinton, was a terrible president, and he has a bad history, a terrible history. I could tell you a lot, but that's not the focus tonight. So anybody who sat there and loved Obama, we were all hoping that he was going to make some change. He didn't make no change for us.
Mm-hmm.
What change did he do? Nothing. He let a few people out of jail for selling weed. And that's about it.
And not only that, he had Jay-Z, Beyonce, Steve Harvey, they all came to Al Sharpton, came to the White House. He had a gospel event. Oh, whoop-de-doo. The photo ops,
Yeah,
that's all that was, man.
Nonsense. Just nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah,
We need a real president. We need a real African-American person who really cares for the people, especially our people. They never talk about the poor people. They always talk about the middle class, the rich people. Poor class, they don't even think about it. That's why I'm saying the president, he's not going to do anything about a whole suicide and everything. He's not going to bother. I'm telling you, they just don't care. I don't put my trust in them no more. I'm tired of these politicians. No hope in them. Unless you get a real genuine person really cares about the community and cares about the people. They're going to be, if they become a president, they got to be a president for all the people. But they got to look out for our people, too. Our people are so full of hurt. We've been abused for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Problem. And nobody's doing nothing about it. You do have some people like Brother Dawood and all, trying to reach out. We got other people trying to reach out to our people, trying to educate them, teach them, how to be real men and women and things of that nature. But how many of us out there trying to do that. Everybody's hooked on the media, entertainment. They want to entertain you as much as possible so you don't think. Because our children think. They don't teach them to think in these schools at all. There's no critical thinkers. You're just a bunch of slaves in these schools. That's all it is. To teach our children to think, to be real thinkers. That's what we need, you see? So if we can educate them to think, then maybe we can get somewhere. But until then, if they don't think, they're just going to be programmed by the media and the social media and all that, and we're never going to have a true healing or, you know, or whatever. So anyway, I just want to add that in there.
Well, things are in place now, brother, because you already know, like I was telling, I was piggybacking off something Brother Daoud said, you know, with the they're doing this. They're going to take money away. You ain't going to be able to count money no more. Everything's going to be on the card. And if they don't like what Brother Daoud said tonight on my show, Brother Daoud going to be at Whole Foods trying to get a check out. And then they're going to be like, oh, excuse me, sir, you have no. What do you mean I ain't got no money? What do you mean? I know I had funds last night before I went to bed. That's what they're doing. They control us. And we got to push back
thing.
On them.
That's the whole plan, is to control the masses. And they started with this pandemic to see how the people react. Everybody wear masks. Everybody do this. Everybody 6 feet apart. All this. And you know where that whole thing with 6 feet apart came from? Believe it or not. There was a march. I think it was 1916, somewhere around there. It showed the KKK with their mask on, marching 6 feet apart. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's where they got that idea.
Rituals.
It's all the
rituals,
programming
exactly.
The people. Symbolism. The people
mm-hmm.
And to see how many of us are going to be sheep and go for the okey-doke so they can plan the next agenda, you know, to keep controlling our people to fall for anything. And before you know it, they're going to be like zombies. Just like you said, boys, they're going to be the walking zombies. They are the walking dead already.
They sure are.
Walking dead. I mean, you don't have to watch the movies no more. Just go out in the street. You see the walking dead all day long.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. This society's terrible, man. Anyway,
Brother
okay, let me shut my mouth.
Yeah, brother, calm down, brother. You got to drink a glass of carrot juice over there. So that's my brother, man. Hey, listen, he's got that. That's how we're like this, brother. We're invigorated. And by the way, Brother Rashad is like me, brother. He's, you know, vegan. You know, he's been a vegan. How many years now, Brother Rashad?
39 years.
39 years. And listen, this August only make 10 for me. All right, so that's just that natural vegan fire in us, you know what I'm saying? Brother Jay, is anybody, listen, y'all, hit the love button, like my man Patrick Dale says. Hit that love button. If you got a question for Brother Dale before we go to Brother John, hit the number one button. We're going to bring you in. Jay, do we have anybody hitting the number one button? Because I got a lot of listeners, y'all. Sometimes they just like to listen. I don't know.
Hello?
But, we're going to see. Yes, sir. Oh, my man, Dr. James.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, doctor. Yes,
Dr.
sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. How you doing, sir? Okay. Yeah, many of the things you mentioned were right on point. One of the problems that I think a lot of this stems from the education system. I think the education system needs to be corrected because I think that a lot of the children are not being properly prepared to become adults. The school systems are neglecting the children. You have children, people graduating from high school. I worked as a college professor for many years. Graduating from high school, can't even read. You know, they have no idea of the economy or how the government works. You have to look at this. First of all, when they established this country, this is not a democracy. This is called a democratic republic. And it's not that the people rule, it's that the states rule. And a lot of people think that the people rule in a democracy, it will be one vote, one person throughout wherever you live. If you lived in California, your vote will be equal to someone who lives in New York. But in a democratic republic, it's not. When you vote for president in California, you're only voting for the Electoral College representatives of the state of California. So this is not a democracy. When they established this country, one of the issues, one of the ways that they established it to protect it, to be a democratic republic, was the Senate. See, some people think, okay, Obama had 2 years with control of the House and the Senate, but he didn't really have control of the Senate. The way the Senate is set up is the Senate does not represent the people. The Senate represents the land. The senators represent the land. They represent the states. They don't represent the people. The House of Representatives represent the people. So you may say, well, Obama had the majority of votes in Congress. He didn't have the majority of votes in the Senate, because in the Senate, you can't get 50%. Most of the votes that they take in the Senate, you have to get 60 votes, not 50. 60. And Obama did not have 60 votes in the Senate. This is why he couldn't get a lot of things passed. This is going on right now with Biden. He's trying to get certain things passed, but he doesn't have 60 votes, not 50. It's not a majority rule in the Senate. You have to have 60 votes to stop the filibuster. So the way they set this government up is that they protected the senators, were your rich people when they established the government, your landholders, your landowners, and they want to control. And you look at the Senate and you see that a little small state like Wyoming that doesn't have a million people in it, right? It's not supposed to have equal representation in Congress because of the small amount of people living in Wyoming, but they have the same amount of senators as the state of New York, too. So in the Senate, Wyoming has equal amount of votes as the state of New York, but Wyoming only has less than a million people, and New York has 20 million. So that's not fair. It's not right. So this is one of the problems Obama faced. And let me go to the other thing. Another person that, if you want to discuss a black person, supposed to be black, that didn't do a darn thing and haven't done a darn thing for the black people since he got in office, is Clarence Thomas. Now, you talking about Obama didn't do nothing. Look at Clarence Thomas. Not only did he didn't do nothing for the minorities or the blacks or the poor, he went against every single thing. Every vote that he had, he went against the blacks, Clarence Thomas. And we got that guy in there representing the black people. Come on.
We already know what's up with Clarence Thomas, but let me say something. We need to stay a little focused. My brother that I was talking about is the children. Now, we can talk about Obama. We're not talking about the political thing. We just got a little sidetracked with that. But it's a common
all right, okay,
what,
but, okay, I'll get back. But what he mentioned was it mentioned about the housing crisis, and I think that affects the children because in many of the situations, people have lost their housing. Many of the poor people have lost their housing, the minority, and that affects children even if you don't realize it does.
Mm-hmm,
and yeah, that you say Obama was the cause of that. I believe it was Clinton, because Clinton was the one.
Was
I was reading
them,
something
go
about.
Ahead, sir.
I was reading something about redlining, and they had redlining going on in the minority areas where they were charging the minority people more for the housing mortgage than they were charging the whites, and that was started during the Clinton administration where they was trying to get people into housing, but the amount of interest that they were charging the minority was so high, they couldn't afford to pay it. Their jobs wouldn't allow them to pay it. So Clinton was the founder of that. When Obama got in, he seen the scandal that was going on that was established through the Clinton administration and through the Bush administration, and Obama said that we have all these people that are in these houses that can't afford to pay the mortgage. So he was stuck in a situation. Now, he did some illegal stuff, some wrong stuff.
For a reason. Distraction, that's all that was.
Well, he did it because I think he was put in that position where Clinton and Bush have already messed up the real estate market. And he came down on him where he had to make some moves to keep people in their houses or the whole darn thing would have collapsed.
See, any movie made, I'm sure Brother Dow will co-sign this, and we're going to get back on track. We're talking about the kids. He was the puppet master controlled the puppet, all right? And I'll just leave it like that, all right? Because they sit down, they all play golf together, they're all part of the
he cooperated.
Club
and you do parliamentary tricks to justify it, because they are just parliamentary tricks, white people got paid during those first 2 years. That didn't get interrupted. And black people paid with their lives in the form of their children taking their own lives. And he could have done things, and he didn't. If you could just show me where he fought and lost those battles instead of generalizing and saying that all these parliamentary tricks prevented him, then we'd have a discussion. But you can't, because he didn't put up a fight. That was one of the complaints of him during those 2 years, sir. But staying focused on the children, and it's not about having faith in political leaders, because somebody made that statement too. It's all about doing the work. So we have the a message from history that taught us this, and not so long ago, the Black Panther movement. Average people, mainly young people in their 20s, establishing a food program because government, not an individual politician, but government wasn't providing the necessities for resources that allow children to go to school with full bellies. There are black young people working, organizing, and educating, getting people together and getting children fed. I bet there are a lot of children that felt better about their lives because they were being fed. It was so successful that government took on that and created a school lunch program. So what am I saying? I'm saying it's not so much about faith in symbolic leaders, which Obama was, because he was white. He was a white man's wet dream. I am saying that the pressure should be placed on government, no matter who's ever there, and when they fail us, we make them pay. No matter how much symbolism we are told to associate with them, and no matter how many parliamentary tricks are used to excuse their inappropriate behavior, we hold them accountable for our babies. And we're not doing that. Instead, we're finding excuses for symbolism. It has to stop. Mm-hmm. Our children are killing themselves now. So we need to learn from what the Black Panther Party did that was successful and apply it now by feeding our babies and helping to educate them, because that was also mentioned. And that's something that we can do. We can work. That's what's missing now. Instead of hoping that symbolic leaders will do something, forget that. Make government do something by making people pay for not giving to the communities as they're supposed to be serving. That's what an answer is.
I understand everything you're saying. I want to stick with the discussion on children. But in order to do these things that you're mentioning, I believe the government has to be changed, because, like I just told you, you're not going to be able to pass these bills as long as you can't control the Senate. Many of the bills, and you can't control the Senate when you can get a bunch of Republicans to move up to Wyoming and Idaho, where there's hardly any people, and they'll get two senators in there that'll vote against everything for the minorities. You'll never get the bills changed. So the Electoral College has to be changed. The Senate has to be changed. There has to be changes to the government structure in order to get these things done.
And on that note,
Dr. Rose, keep some things in.
On that note, Dr. King, let's see if we got somebody else calling in. Thank you, my brother. He always comes every week, y'all. Thank you. I appreciate you, brother. Keep listening.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Jay, we got anybody else hitting number one button? Hit the love button out there, y'all. You got a question for Brother Dowd.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Adrian again. A good conversation. I'm a child of the Panthers. You know, they had a heavy program in New York when I was coming up, and I was a part of their youth program, and it was an awesome program. And we were talking about it about a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know where it came from, but I just started reciting one of the poems we had to learn, you know, one of the empowerment poems we had to learn when we were little. And I was surprised that the whole thing came out. I was like, "Ooh, I still remember that," you know. But we
Can you recite it for us?
I knew you were going to say that. I'm ready. I don't think I'm not ready.
Go right ahead, because I want to hear.
I ain't got no time for jiving, man. Ain't got no time to waste. Ain't got no time to boogaloo, ain't got no time to taste. Ain't got no time to light one up, no time to pop a bag. Just can't afford no being high on coke or smooth or sag. Ain't got no time for the weak, man. This is the day of the strong. You got time to get it right or ending up dead wrong. I ain't got no time for jiving, man. This is the time to do. If you ain't ready for TCB, I ain't got no time for you.
Mm.
Ooh, and
right
that was in
system.
What, the
all
70s?
That was in the 70s, right?
That was the late 70s. I can't believe I said
and that. And that came from young people in their 20s organizing and educating.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they were like in their 20s, but I think I was like 13, 14 years old at the time when my parents was involved in it. But the Black Panthers, and I hated it because every time you see it on TV, it's something about them doing something wrong. And
there you go.
I know them as a powerful organization, and I agree with what somebody just said. You know, we need to bring back those programs instead of sitting back waiting on the government to do. We need to take care of our people. And I
it's a dual proposition that we do what we can on the grassroots, but we also those who are talented focus putting heat on changing the very things the brother mentioned about parliamentary stuff, but more importantly, making them pay when they fail us instead of celebrating their blackness in office. We've got to stop
that.
Right. That's good. You're right.
Well, I used to say the same thing when Obama first got in. I was like, everybody's celebrating our first black president, but he's not black. I mean, he's black, but, you know, that's not who he's stepping in representing.
What we called Mario back in the day.
evidence is his record.
Mm-hmm.
Not what he tried to do, but his record. And he created more white millionaires and no black millionaires at all during his term. 95% of all income gains during his presidency went to the top 3% in America. Black people got shafted. That took effort. That means there was a conscious effort for him not to serve us.
Right.
Fall for the parliamentary tricks all you like, but that took effort for that to happen. The numbers don't lie. Unless your lying eyes do, in my humble opinion. Our children are starving and are suffering.
Right. That's unfortunate. Now, Jay, do we have any thank you, Sister Adrian, for that. I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate
you. Thank you, Sister.
Jay, we got anybody else, Jay? Hit the number one button, y'all. The love button. You want to come in? Anybody hit one, Jay?
Give me one second.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's it. Everybody's on, but nobody else hit one at this time.
Okay. All right. So with that being said, they're listening now. So, Brother Daoud, I'm going to let you wrap it up. I'm going to bring Brother John on. But I just want to say on behalf of grown folks, talk and express yourself, I appreciate you coming on. And this will not, as long as the Most High blesses me with breath in my body, hopefully be the last time that we hear from you, brother, because we're going to bring you back.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
And brother Daoud, where are you based at?
Oh, yeah, give me information.
Here,
I'm sorry. Uh-oh, he broke up. Say it again, brother. Start from the beginning. You broke up a little there for a minute.
Jashai in Jamaica, Queens.
Oh, okay. I used to live in Jamaica, Queens.
Oh, okay.
My first service is
Brother Dowell, before we bring on Brother John, could you repeat that? Because I didn't hear what you said. You broke up again.
Yeah, he completely broke up.
Oh, he did?
My first job was in Jamaica, Queens at 19. I'm full circle.
Okay. Well, peace and blessings to you, my brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Now, Sister Shai, you want to bring on our next brother with his presentation? Brother John.
Go ahead, Brother John. Where are you?
All right. I'm on.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Hey, I want to thank
John. Before you start, Barbara, can you give him your number in case people need mental health appointments?
Thank you. I get carried away. It is area code 614-596-9607. And I am limited to performing evaluations and referrals primarily, but I can help you get to some roots of some problems and lead you in a direction that you can have better mental health.
Okay, John, take it away.
Outstanding. I was just enjoying the conversation. I want to thank Brother Dawood for his enlightening information. That is very powerful information that I think we can act upon, you know, more consciously. Thanks, Brother Forrest Nance and Brother Rashad El Amin and all his guests for coming on. I just wanted to present what makes us sick and what makes us well. Those that don't know me, my name is John Lee Gray. I'm a holistic health practitioner, background in clinical massage therapy. I specialize in helping with relieving pain in the neck, carpal tunnel, lower back, and extremities. I also have background in art, originally from Louisiana, by the way, just coming up by way of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I am a lifelong student of the spiritual arts, and I help people, you know, find a bearing, you know, get a good compass on what's actually going on in the world with regards to spirituality and how that connects directly to our practical lives. Let's see. So, yeah, I started my journey with coming into an awareness of health and wellness by starting off kind of sickly. And so coming up with, an experience of poverty, you know, living in the car for about 3 years with my mom, my dad, my sister. We spent some time a lot running up and down the road, you know, picking up cans and doing a lot of things to try to, you know, keep us going as a family. You know, we got thrown out of our house. I think I was about age 6 at the time. And so 3 years of that, you know, I learned a lot more than most people that, you know, most of my peers that went to school. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, because my mom was a former school teacher, she taught us, you know, me and my sister, everything that we knew. And when we finally were, you know, taken by family services, we ended up making very good impressions on those people who were testing us. And the reason for their testing was to incriminate, you know, my parents for not letting us go to school. And the thing was, you know, the penalty, you know, of those tests would have been, if we didn't pass, would have been incarceration, okay? But because my mom and my dad exposed us to what was going on directly, we were able to bypass a lot of the initial programming of the school system, and we ended up being off the charts, you know, in our testing results, and that ultimately gave them their freedom. You know, it was because of the work that they did while we were on the street, you know, surviving at the time. And so hats off to mom and dad, you know. And but, you know, during that time, you know, we can only make so much money to keep to keep our health, you know, optimized. And so as a result, you know, a lot of time went by with, you know, bouts of skin lesions, stomach aches, headaches, and so forth. And I didn't, you know, all I remember was the pain and, you know, some of the things I went through, you know, in terms of, you know, colds and, you know, different types of near pneumonia type, incidents. And every time I would have an episode, I would feel like, well, what can I do to make it better? But as it turns out, as time went on, I remembered everything that I needed to remember, and I kept the zeal to want to solve problems. Even watching my aunt, for the first time encountering cancer, and I think this was back then, this was like in the 1970, maybe 75 or 76, she first came home and was crying, and I vowed then and there that I would find a cure for cancer. And so, of course, I went straight off to, really paying attention to things that actually brings us wealth, of wealth in terms of health. And so just paying attention helped me to realize that what makes us sick is the exposures to the most, to most of the things that we accept as being enjoyable, the things that we accept as being tradition, the things that make us feel, extremely good, but they have, very, very ill consequences. And so I want us to really get an idea of the factors that go into making us sick. Number one is contamination that leads to number two, which is depletion. Okay. So the contamination part, let's focus on that. So we can have contamination through
My brother, hold on for 1 minute.
Hold on.
Okay. Somebody's got to mute themselves. I hear music in the back. Come on now. Y'all got to mute yourselves. Hold on for 1 second, brother.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay. For sure.
Okay, thank you. All right, we can hear. All right, sound like.
Yeah, I've been on that here before.
That was a country and western music they were listening. Okay, but go right ahead, my brother. Sorry about that.
Diversity in here, yeah. So, pretty much what makes us sick is contamination that leads to depletion. And what we begin off with as human beings is the congenital aspect, in a lot of cases, especially nowadays, we're dealing with prenatal contamination brought on by some of those things that I mentioned earlier, some of our social habits, our dietary traditions, exposure to, standard of care medicines, what we call drugs, over-the-counter, as well as, other types of narcotics. We deal with environmental exposures, and not to mention some of the things we were talking about earlier, which leads to mental health stressors, like some of the things in our economy, the social situation, exposure to radiation and other pollutants. Okay, we have. When we have all of those factors, they all cumulatively lead to depletion. And so the depletion actually, shows up in the mother's, mother's blood, the deficiencies of certain vitamins and minerals. And so when mothers don't do their preparations, taking their multis, eating holistically, eating living foods, rich, organic, homegrown types of foods, then the mother's blood isn't sufficient enough to bring forward, a healthy, well and strong baby. And so we also have the exposure the depletion that shows up in the father's sperm. Okay, and so we know that those social exposures that the father probably partook in, led to the depletion of the energy, that actually gives the sperm motility. And so what I wanted to do there is to just kind of give that image of what really makes us sick. It's all of our exposures, and then that actually, you know, leads to instances of poor choices, which ultimately culminates into mental illness. And so I know Brother Dalton, he's got a lot more to tell you guys, and trust me, he has a lot to tell you about you know, some of the areas where mental illness plays a factor in our, you know, in our situation now. But enough of what makes us sick. We want to know what exactly is it that we can know to employ practically to make us well. Okay, and that's where we're going to get in. And this, you know, this main thing we need to know is we need to realize that the order, the function of the body, okay, so the order of function of the body, its primary function is it's an electrical system, okay? That's how we function. Without electricity, the body dies, you know. And so it's just like cooking a freshly killed piece of meat, you know, that once you kill it, you know, electricity leaves it, it starts to become pale or brown or gray. You know, that's exactly what happens to the living human being, you know, as we lose electricity through some of these exposures that I outlined earlier. Okay, so without electricity, our cells don't have enough energy to carry out their multitude of processes in helping our body heal. Okay, and so electricity is the primary. The secondary order of function is the biochemic side. Okay, so the biochemic side includes all of those fine nutrients, you know, that go into, which would be the vitamins, the minerals, and so forth, that goes into metabolic processes, allowing our cells to do what they're supposed to do in terms of building, in terms of binding, so that proper elimination can happen, you know. And then we have, most importantly, the medium by which all of these things happen is the clean water, okay? So clean, filtered water is very essential, especially if we're, you know, if we're eating meals, you know, cooked meals and things like that. But most importantly, we need, whenever we're eating our meals, we need to make sure that we're hydrated first, you know, especially if you're going to cook them, all right? So we can look at the clean water that comes from not just the springs or, you know, some of your purified water that you get. You may have Kangen water. You know, even that water is essential to make all of the other things, including electricity, you know, optimized. Okay, and so I'm going to get into the water thing a little bit more, because water is the medium by which all electrical communication between cells happens. And guess what? If we don't have clean water, that water is contaminated, we lose electricity. You know, that electricity is bound up into whatever materials are not really providing us with the necessary nutritive value. Okay, what I can do here is I can speak to the electricity and then go to the water. Okay, that's what I'll do. So electricity, you have to realize that because we function from electricity, you know, we're an electrical being. The minimum voltage that our cells need to sustain health is minus 25 millivolts. Okay, but when we look at trying to regenerate, you know, or when we're trying to produce another life, we need a minimum of 50 millivolts of generative level of electricity in our cells. Okay, so eating and drinking those foods that are deficient of life, primarily cooked foods and water that's contaminated by sugar, you know, or by artificial flavors, colors, etc., they sap the electricity, and you begin to ultimately drink dead water. That's really what's going on there. Even if you have fizz in it, if you have bubbles, it doesn't matter. If it doesn't have enough minerals in it, and if it's not living, you know, it doesn't have the electricity in that water, if it can't be sustained, neither can your cells. Here's what else that does. Okay, if you don't have that F mineral balance in there, the surface tension of the water, okay, the surface tension, here's what I mean by that. Okay, so we've all heard of hard water and soft water, okay? So the surface tension of hard water makes it such that if you pour that water over a screen, something with a lot of holes in it, that water would sit on top of that screen. It wouldn't filter through. Okay, so what we're looking for is to soften our water. Okay, and this would help a lot of us, you know, get over the fact that, okay, I can't drink half my body weight of water. We can actually drink less water by being aware of the surface tension of water. Okay, and what we can do is place some minerals in it through, say, pink Himalayan sea salt. You know, do a small dash if you have a glass. I'd say do a half of two cc. I'd say one cubic center or one milliliter of salt into a glass, and then you can place some drops of magnesium, and that magnesium and that salt would actually make the water potential, the electric potential of that water, be high. Let's say if you had that glass out in the sun, you'd be able to charge that baby up, and when you drink your water, you're good. I mean, your cells have some, not only hydration to move, you know, to and from throughout the circulatory system, you have enough energy. When the water permeates into the cells and into the tissues, they can do something with it. Okay, you don't have to drink you don't have to drink half your body weight, but instead you would drink what you need. Okay, and your body knows that, and you know, if you're forcing yourself to try to drink half your body weight and you're not used to it, you'll probably quit at some point. And so this is what we don't want you to do. We want you to drink water, but be more conscious when you drink your water. Place liquid magnesium drops in your water, and you can place your pink Himalayan sea salt, which is 82 or 84 plus trace minerals in it, and that makes for your electrolyte. Okay, and so it's called electrolyte for a reason, because it actually gives our blood potential to conduct information for the cells, you know, to function properly. All right, so let's take a look at the ways that we can get electricity into our system. Number one is breathing. Okay, so we've talked earlier about, you know, what they've been doing, you know, to try to, you know, get us under control. You know, wear your mask up. Okay, so we found that there's been many people who've gotten sick because of what's called hypoxia, and that's the inability to get oxygen from the air that we're breathing in, and consequently, when you're breathing with the mask over your face, you're exhaling your CO2 and breathing that back in again without, you know, and think about successive breaths, okay, throughout the day. Some people wear them while they're driving their car all day. But if you're doing this at work, sitting down, being sedentary, you're not able to get ample amount of oxygen, you know, which let's break down oxygen, because oxygen is in our atmosphere. Whenever there's a sunny day, being that the sun is an electrical, it's an electric dynamo that radiates electricity that enlivens living things, especially during the springtime. If you guys ever notice, when the sun comes above the equator, once it starts advancing towards the northern hemisphere, everything starts to wake up, you know. Now, that's because everything that is alive is an electrical being. That's your plants, that's your animals, and being that we're a part of that same system,
we enliven ourselves as well. Okay, so oxygen, you know, oxygen has that sunlight in it. Okay, and the air that we breathe in is sublimated water, and so when it's charged by the air that we breathe in, it translates into energy into our, you know, through our lungs, and it gets into the bloodstream and so forth. And that's how we get energy when we do light exercise, you know, et cetera. And so oxygen itself also works to with other nutrients to promote ATP, you know. And that's a complex thing that, you know, we all can look up later. But ATP, if you remember that or write that down, you can see how oxygen works well with other things to create that energy, ATP, which translates also back into electricity. All right, so the second, okay, so that was breathing. The second is light and sunshine itself, okay? So being that the sun is a big electric power source and enlivens everything, we take in due to its proximity through our eyes, and the conversion through the hypothalamus, okay, and that's that area in the center of our brain, near the front, under the frontal lobe. That hypothalamus uses that light to produce different hormones. Okay, we understand vitamin D is a hormone, okay, and that vitamin D contributes to our health, all right? And then we also get that through our skin. Okay, the melanocytes in our skin also absorbs that electricity for us and gives us more energy. Now, I have a story about a situation when my dad, you know, and me and my family, we were out at this rest area called Oak Town. He wasn't strong enough, so we had one of those stick shifts. And he got outside. He said, "Man, I can't push this car." You know, he was trying to push it so he can give it a jump. And he said, "Well, let me get out in the sun." He said, "My dad is a dark brother." and he got out in that sun, he stretched and everything, and just soaked it up. And next thing I knew, he got behind that car, he pushed it, and it started rolling. He ran, got in, put it in gear, and on it went. It started. He said, "Well," and you know, we all were amazed. We watched him. You know, it took him about 5 minutes to do that, though. And a little breathing. So he got his prana, he got his electricity through breathing and through the sunshine. All right, so that's light and sunshine and breathing. Now we have number three, and we have four that I'm going to cover here today. Number three is through living fruits and vegetables. All right, so how do we get electricity through living fruits and vegetables? We just don't cook them. Okay. See, whenever we cook fruits and vegetables, now there are some that you have to cook just, you know, to allow the digestive system to work, and we know those things, you know, that we need to put in the pot, you know, your rice and your, you know, different legumes and so forth. But when you're dealing with, you know, fruiting bodies like, you know, your traditional fruits, oranges, berries, melons and so forth, you want to make sure that those are fresh, you know, they're, if possible, organically grown. If you grow them yourself, even better. But when you have your living fruits and vegetables, they're getting the minerals from the soil. And, of course, they've gotten their energy, their electricity from the sun, okay, through photosynthesis. That translates, flows through the xylem and phloem of the plant and enters into the fruit. And that's for us. Those are the little batteries that we use to charge ourselves up. We just eat some fruit. And you'll see, I mean, many of us know from eating fruit when we were smaller, we had tremendous energy. You know, and we often got in trouble for having a little too much at times without even having candy. But yeah, fruits and vegetables, we don't want to cook them. Okay, we want to eat them raw. And number four. Okay, number four is going to blow your mind because muscle movement, you know, whether it be through exercise or massage, just agitating the muscle creates electricity in and of itself. This is why getting a massage can be very re- relaxing and rejuvenating. It's just the fibers, the movement of the fibers and the fascia, okay? And that fascia in the muscle, the fascia is what covers the muscle. It's what we see for those of us who are still, you know, still eating meat. You know, it's that white piece, it's that white layer that's over the muscle of the meat, okay? Now, that piece, that layer that we have that's called fascia is a conductor. And it actually is one of those things that goes beyond what nerves do. Okay, so nerves are conductors of impulses, you know, neural electric pulses. But fascia also is a conductor. It conducts different levels of energy throughout our bodies and contributes to the distribution, the even distribution and communication of electricity throughout our body. Okay? So, yeah. So now we're to the clean water, all right? So we have the clean water. That would be water that's mineralized and purified, and waters of our fruits and veggies and herbs and found in our leaves, you know, the leaves that we have, the greens. This water, you know, the water that we get, of course, we have to have that surface tension to be soft enough. And believe me, when you try the difference, if you have a Kangen water system, you can still see the difference. Okay, now Kangen water is supposed to be some of the best water you can produce, right? From your faucet, you know, they filter it, and it has a little electrolyte thing that kind of gives it a little alkalinity. A lot of alkalinity. Sometimes it goes up to 9.5. But when you're able to give that water that type of quality of having a softer surface tension, the healing just has to happen. It allows the cells in your body to not only get rid of toxins, but to assimilate nutrients a lot faster. This is where your healing effects come from. Okay. So this is what it is to get better, to get well. It's to have clean water and to know that you're an electrical being, okay? And so it doesn't matter what level of health you are. If something knocks you down and hard enough or takes you out or whatever, when you die, it's because the electricity is leaving. You know, it's because of that, you know. And when you see in certain emergency situations, you have defibrillators, they're trying to get electricity back into your body so that you can come back. So this is what it takes. You know, you have to have that awareness of that electrical potential of your body, being able to keep up the biochemics, you know, through your food, making sure that you don't overcook your food, making sure that you don't put too much of a sweetener that would take away the electrical potential of your water, and just eating living food as your main intake. Okay, it's one thing to be a vegetarian, you know, but if you're eating cooked foods, you might as well be eating meat for the types of things that cooking does to your food. Number one, what it does. When you put something on the stove, you're burning out a lot of the vitamins and minerals in a lot of cases. And not only that, when you do that, you're taking out enzymes as well. So guess what? We all have pancreas. We're born with pancreas. You know, whenever we eat, the first thing that happens is that pancreas says, okay, let's send some enzymes to the stomach to make sure that this stuff gets, you know, digested. Okay, so if we're overcooking, and if we're cooking as a main staple in our diet, we're actually sapping the life force, you know, and the enzymatic potential from our bodies. And this is what makes us have a certain lifespan as Black Americans. You know, we've been used to slapping stuff on the grill, you know, I like grilled foods, but you know, we can't make that as a you know, dietary tradition that on celebration, because here's the other, is the mental side to that. When you're doing these things as a celebration, you're taking the good times and adding a little poison to it. You know, if you think of it in that way, you know, you're adding a little poison to the good time. So we all love to have a good time, but sometimes we overdo it, you know, and it's just a matter of being a little bit more aware and starting to condition our palates so that whenever it's time to have a good time, treat yourself to some good fresh food and see how you feel after the celebration. It's a big difference, I tell you. I mean, as a 16-year vegan, you know, I did 8 years and then went off for about 3 years, and then I got back on because I saw problems returning. It's like, okay, I'm in for life now. So, I've never felt better. I probably feel, you know, just like I was in my 20s, and I'm in my 50s now. I think in a couple of days I'll be 54. So. And, feeling great. I'll be wrapping it up here. And if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to field any and supply you with answers that I have available.
Well, yes, sir, Brother John, thank you for that. And Sister Shive, if we're going to go now to any questions or answers or comments, so we're going to start off with the ladies. Don't jump over each other. You got Sister Carol, Sister Adrian. Anybody would like to make a comment?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, this is Adrian. I'm just curious. That's good information, and I thank you for it. But my struggle, and I'm going through that now, I've been going through this for the last at least 2 years. I'm trying to change my diet and change my activity. And it's working partially. You know, my immune system is not doing what I would like it to do. But, you know, I'm losing a lot of weight. But my question is, how do I make that transfer from junk food eating, which when I say junk food, I mean food that's not as good for me as some others are, to more nutritional eating, you know, because listening to you, I know there's some I just read about and I started doing, I'm like, okay, that's not helping, you know what I'm saying, because you assume that just because it's a vegetable, it's doing well, but I stopped cooking my vegetables, so to speak, but I would steam them, you know. So is steaming just as bad as cooking?
No, actually, steaming is actually a better option if you're going to eat them right away.
Okay.
What steaming does, yes, and I thank you for that question, because what steaming does is it actually softens the fibers. I'm specifically thinking, I have an image in my mind of asparagus, you know. I know that at the...
Did I say that out loud?
I missed what you said.
I said, ew.
Okay.
That's an automatic reaction to asparagus for me.
You know, and that's another, you know, another thing that we may have to look at, you know, because in a lot of cases what we're dealing with there is, you know, some foods may not match up with our blood type. And in a lot of cases what happens is our bodies actually respond in kind to something that's not really in alignment with what our blood is really, you know, seeking as its, you know, source of nutrients. So it also can work the other way, but in rare cases. But what we can do in terms of getting your
transfer from junk food to more nutritional is you know, make a list of those things that you really like to eat. You know, just make a list and, you know, keep in touch with some of our people here at the African Holistic Health chapter. And, you know, we can help you with, you know, with some of those things. When you have a list of what you really like and you can find a substitute for that, you know, then you can start taking steps to actually go into the stores that actually carry those particular items. A lot of there's a big myth about, you know, going vegan or vegetarian about, you know, the cost. The only thing that happens there, what makes that true, is if you keep buying the things that you always bought along with the new stuff that you're trying to transition into. Okay. So right to kind of experiment, you know, in the beginning to find out, okay, what can I eat on a regular basis more often and start buying more of that. And then, you know, start figuring it out and check off those things and say, well, hey, you know what, I really can do without this. You know, even though it's tasting good, you might even find that your body feels better without it. You know, and so it's very important to listen to your body. And also surround yourself by people who may be on that path as well. Either who's been, you know, who's been a vegan for a while and have a measure of mastery. Just set your kitchen up for it too. You know, that's the thing that I call my kitchen the health lab. You know, and whenever I go into that kitchen, I'm not looking at, you know, trying to put a pot on the stove to cook something down so I can really eat it. I'm looking for something that I can put in a bowl, you know, that's easy to digest, that's alive, and try to, you know, eat more of that. And whenever there is something that goes into a pot, you know, I can eat that as a small meal, you know, but not make that as the staple of my daily, you know, daily routine.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope I've answered your question.
You did. Thank you. Except when you mentioned asparagus. That's like a curse.
Yeah, blood type is everything. So you'll have to give us a call and, you know, help us help you find out, you know, what you need to get your, you know, your blood type aligned with the food that's going to give you the best results.
Well, thank you, Sister AJ. Appreciate that. She's always on point. She's always asking questions. That's good. That's what we need, energy from the crowd. And you're giving energy and spirit in return to our audience. I want to thank you, Brother John. But I want to ask you a question. All right, I didn't get a chance to talk to my dear brother Rashad. All right, brother's been a naturopath for over 38 years, giving local protocols to help the culture, the community. I just want to, and I'm going to talk to Brother Rashad tomorrow about this. But I remember a while back, and for the podcast listeners out there, put on your seatbelts, all right, because we're going to get a little down and dirty with what I have to ask this brother. I just want his take on this, all right? I remember a while back, that I was listening to a lecture by Dr. Sabi, and he mentioned something about when he did his fast, how he drank his own urine. And I was like, "What? Whoa, I had to play that back. I said, he drank his own urine. I said, I think that's a little too extreme now. Come on, now he drank on you. But now, fast forward, okay? And, you know, we put Dr. Sabi in the line in the culture with one of our great healers. But now fast forward, I was listening to a program, and it was a gentleman who was talking about drinking his own urine and how he treated some of his patients. Now, this was a doctor, and he was saying that that everybody on a good diet, not a bad diet, on a good diet, that urine is structured water. And he said it had a certain amount of protein and nutrients in it. And he was also talking about getting urine. You put it in a mason jar because people, of course, couldn't stand the smell of urine. And you let the sun hit it for 9 days and it becomes even more intensified. So I just like to know what your take is on that, because he said that some of his patients, he put them on a protocol along with a plant-based diet, and it helped alleviate some of the problems that they had. So,
yeah.
Brother John, could you give me your take on that?
Wow, okay. I'm definitely in agreement with that. The diet is key. You can't drink your urine if you're still eating junk food. And this is a part of where that smell comes from, you know, because it does have proteins in it. There's hormones that's in urine as well. As a matter of fact, there's been a special that I don't remember what show it came on, but there's actually businesses that have been formed for collecting urine, you know, in places where people congregate, and from fairs, health fairs, and so forth, and that urine is actually used, you know, because it has plasma in it, you know, the urine separates, you know, they're able to extract the plasma from the urine and sell it as medicine, you know, and so when we talk about drinking your own urine, you have to clean up your system first, because the body is a great refinery, and
right.
You know, it structures the water. Just as you said earlier, you know, the body is a great refinery, and once you get your body introduced to, you know, the cleansing nutrients of fresh foods, then your body, of course, starts to process these nutrients from these various foods. Now, to the degree of your, you know, the nutritional content of the food is going to be the degree in which your urine becomes medicine. And when you're able to start that process, of course, it's like miraculous things can happen, because your body recognizes what is, you know, the excess of what it's produced, you know, in that process of cleansing, and it uses that. And whatever may still be toxic in it, it's not at a level where it's going to, you know, even register as any type of, you know, adverse response, you know, or resistant response, because it's already been processed through the whole system. It's recognized fully, and it's just getting rid of excess, you know, so that the body can maintain its homeostasis.
Right, right. Okay. It sounds good to me. I know some people are like, oh, man, talking about asparagus. Oh, boy. I know I'm a hit, boy. Okay. Panel, are there any more questions out there, panel, for Brother John? Comments?
I have a comment. This is Carolyn.
Yes, Carolyn. Yay, Carolyn.
Thank you, Brother John. That was loaded. That was loaded information.
Awesome.
So yeah, I thank you for that. I know my
welcome.
Dad is not drinking enough water. I have to push myself to drink more water. But one of the things that I started doing during the pandemic was making sure I went and took a walk every day, and just so that I wasn't staying sedentary. And that's so important, what you were talking about, the muscles, and just using your muscles, trying to encourage people to get out and have some movement, because that was, I think, so important. People were sitting around gaining a lot of weight during this pandemic.
That's right.
So thank you for all that information. It was very good, very good, very enlightening.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome. I just want to say that, you know, I'm glad that you're seeing the value in this, because it's not one thing in isolation. You know, it's the whole combination of these things that we've covered today. And these are just the foundation. These are the fundamentals. You know, that's saying, you know, that's addressing the human body if it's not in a chronic state. You know, but of course you focus on one or more of these things with a little more intensity when you're dealing with trying to eliminate a chronic condition, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Well, Brother John, I want to ask you a question for myself, because I've been in gym enthusiast since 1986. And I did quite a few push-ups and weights, and I'm going to tell you something. You know, they said no gain, no pain, but as I got more into the knowledge of working out, They need to drop that same, because that's what we did back in 86 when I took out my first gym membership, because we trained
all
like
right.
that, and I wouldn't do it now. I mean, not saying because I'm older.
Right.
I would have trained myself. I would have done more stretching and more calisthenics.
Yes.
And with that being said, I noticed that I've developed in both hands, especially in my thumbs, but it's not bad, but I feel it, like the carpal tunnel syndrome, because I got an MRI.
Yes.
And they
okay.
diagnosed that. And what do you recommend for that in terms of nutrition? And because there's some brothers that go to the gym I know are listening. What would you recommend, or what would you say? Because I stretch every day. I stretch my hands, my fingers, and things of that nature. So where do we take that, my brother?
Okay, yeah. So you want to make sure that you have good water. You know, you're drinking more of the clean water with your salt in it, because your salt, the pink Himalayan sea salt, has silica in it. And so a lot of silica, you know, we may not be getting enough silica. What I also do is, you know, to supplement and get more sulfur, I supplement with MSM crystals, okay, and that goes in your water as well. So you can put like a half a tea in that, you know, in the water, in a glass of water with your half cc of sea salt, you know, pink Himalayan salt, rather, not sea salt. Pink Himalayan salt. And then put your magnesium in there. And once you get that combination, you're going to feel, it's going to be like your mouth is actually drinking, you know, the water before you swallow it.
Right.
And so you want those silicates to circulate it throughout your system, so that when you do your stretching, you don't get any scar tissue, you know, you don't get any adhesion. That's really what the carpal, you know, any of your mobile joints, you know, that that have repetitive motion, you're getting adhesions in those areas. You want to make sure that you have enough silica, fresh silica that, you know, can be exchanged for that fresh. You want to exchange those toxins, you know, for the fresh water and silicates that come in.
Right.
Also, you'll need some enzymes. If you can find anything that's like proteolytic enzymes, those also help, you know, help break down, you know, fibrous tissues that may be, you know, getting stuck or coming into a bind in your musculature and in your joints. Those two. And glucosamine chondroitin, very good stuff.
Yeah, the sulfur, I take
that.
Very good
stuff for the joints.
All right.
That's what I would do.
Well, brother, I'm on top of it. I appreciate that information. And also, I'd just like to say thank you. And we're winding down about that time. I think we got about 3 minutes left. So would you care to share your information with the audience in case they want to get in contact with you?
Yes, sure. Well, my website isn't up yet, but for those of you who will be anticipating, you can go to yourbodyisthecure.com, and you can find me on Facebook, John L. Gray. If you see the photograph of me, you'll see me holding the sun, be standing on the beach holding the sun, and you can reach me at area code 225-277-CURE. That's 2873. That's area code 225-277-2873. And you can leave me a text message letting me know, you know, if you needed any health consultation, or even some spiritual guidance, or any type of health related information.
Great, brother. Brother John, is that G-R-A-Y or E-Y?
That would be A-Y.
A-Y, okay. Well, I just want to say, this one, you know, going through my dear sister Shazi, I just want to say thank you. We're going to bring you back again for the future. We enjoyed having you, and we're going to give you even more time, because I'm expanding soon. So peace and blessings to you, and I will be reaching out to you myself personally. So I'll give you a buzz, all right?
Outstanding. Brother Nance, this has been a pleasure.
It's been a
pleasure.
Thank you
for having
us. I appreciate it. Well, wait a minute now. Before you go, sister, give your information on the African Holistic Center now before you go. and I'm going to have some closing statements, and I'll be in contact with you, my dear Sister Shy.
Sure. Well, we all work at the African Holistic Health Center. So the number here is 844-829-2296. And our website is www.africanholistic.weebly.com.
All right. Well, thank you, sister.
And we're on Facebook. We're on Facebook, and we're also on YouTube. So it's not hard to find us.
Definitely not. I want to thank you once again, and I look forward to bringing you guys back. And you're always part of our podcast family. And before I depart, I'd like to say my technician, Randy J. Sean Jackson, ladies and gentlemen out there, same number. He comes on Friday night. It's called Keeping It Real with Randy, Mr. J. Sean Jackson, my technician. Every Friday between 8 and 10 p.m., check him out. All right, he has a very impactful and wonderful guest. And on behalf of Grown Folks Talk and Express Yourself, Brother Rashad, Brother Leon, who didn't make it tonight, Karen, Carol, Sister Ali, and Sister Atia, who didn't come in tonight, but we're going to have her back next week. And Sister Agent, on behalf of all the people that support me and my podcast audience, thank you. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Saturday with our special guests. Peace.
Peace.